ChatGPT is very effective in terms of what it can do for business. The biggest challenge there is what information do you expose this artificial intelligence to? And the first and obvious concern is around intellectual property.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Cloud Chat with Stefan and Matt. I'm one of your hosts, Stefan Stelter, here in a partner office today.
And I'm Matt Brown. Stefan, it's been a long time since we've had our last episode. A lot going on, but very happy again to chat with you. I'm really looking forward to our conversation today.
Absolutely. Same here. So as so many things have happened in the world and in IT in particular, what should we talk about today?
Well, why not we talk about what everybody else is talking about? How about a small conversation around artificial intelligence?
Say what? No one's talking about that.
Well, come on.
Nobody's talking about AI. Yeah, it is. It seems the top of mind for everybody. And it sure seems like the ChatGPT is really the driver of a lot of that. It seems like large language models are the ones that have really captured people's attention and got them thinking about what AI might mean to them. I wonder if it's part of that made it approachable for people, where AI seemed like this thing that only special people could do if you're making a self-driving car or something, but being able to interact with a large language model made this feel very, very real to a whole different swath of humans.
And it's interesting. It's like you said, it's kind of hitting us all in different directions. My son at school, you know, the teachers are now very aware that kids can go and get entire term papers written by an online system. So being aware, yes, even in that aspect of our lives. And I've seen articles at major universities talking about how they're really trying to refine their doctorate programs to ensure the research is actually being done by the person in question. So it's like you said, it's hitting us in all different angles. Yes, our cars have always had some level of it. Things you don't really necessarily interact with directly, or you're kind of abstracted from it. But today, I think it's infecting us in many different ways. And even in, you know, as we go into a political season, AI is affecting us in terms of the material, the facts that we receive.
And it forces
us to be more intelligent and aware of that.
Yes, and new definitions for familiar words. So, you know, hallucinations were things that you would get when you were walking through the desert and severely dehydrated, or maybe that's more of a mirage than it is a hallucination. And then, you know, there are other psychotropic reasons why people might have a hallucination, but now we've got AIs having hallucinations.
Hallucinations.
It is truly fascinating. When you think about how IT organizations need to navigate this, what springs to mind? We've been doing a bit of AI, I suppose, as an organization inside of NetApp IT, with the way that we look at data coming in from systems and trying to understand patterns of behavior from the IoT data that we get back from NetApp systems in the field. But curious what your thoughts are for IT in general.
Yeah, so it's interesting. First, I think, you know, when we started tackling AI early on, there is, what do you want to call it, categories. I really look at AI where a machine is making decisions based on data. Everything else is more machine learning. You're teaching a system to behave a certain way. And I think those distinctions are kind of important to some extent. But when we talk about the pragmatic use case for an IT organization like ours, ChatGPT is very effective in terms of what it can do for business. And in that context, we're kind of, I'm going to use the word forced. The IT shops are kind of forced then to embrace it, to challenge it, and to figure out how to manage it effectively and scale it effectively. And I think, you know, the biggest challenge there is what information do you expose this artificial intelligence to? And the first and obvious concern is around intellectual property. You know, you don't want to expose that. You don't want to affect that, taint that. And again, that's why I think IT shops are there and forced to figure out how to do this while protecting our huge investments in our own intellectual property.
Yes, that was it was fascinating to see how some of the early adopters of large language models for the simplification of code, even if it was just commenting code or any of that work, this lack of realization that by putting the code into a public large language model, that code is now in the hands of the large language model owners that, for further learning and all, by all accounts, one would hope for good reasons or for reasons that weren't intentionally malicious, maybe we put it that way,
right.
But just the idea that some of those, that intellectual property is in someone else's hands, something that we're guarding as key competitive advantage for organizations. We saw a couple, I don't want to name organizations, but we certainly saw some of those names show up in the press around folks who had copied and pasted some of the corporate code into a public LLM.
Well, and there's other, and to that point, there's, you know, the obvious threat is you expose your IP indirectly through a chat somehow. But the other piece, which is an equal of challenge, is by if our coders, our people who are developing our IP, accidentally use open source code, the implication is then all your code becomes open source. So there's a lot of different challenges to businesses in terms of how this technology can be leveraged.
Very interesting. Yes, was the sourcing accurate for the code snippets? So, I maybe there's a quick moment of confessional, like how have we used large language models in our roles today? I mean, I'm certainly happy to share some of the things that I've asked, just trying to get ideation going. So for me, I have a hard time starting with something. I have a really good idea of what I want to achieve, but taking that first step becomes difficult. And if I describe what I'm trying to achieve to a large language model, it will get me that first draft that I can then say is not sufficient for what I'm trying to achieve, but I can now refine, right? So it's a whole lot more refinement and a whole lot less work trying to get that spark of initial, overcoming the initial inertia is, I guess, the way to, I would describe it.
I think that is the practical, that's a very practical use, right? I know people are rewriting the simple things like rewriting their LinkedIn or doing their resumes or what have you, all very practical use cases for that. So I think you're spot on in terms of you've already used it for certain things to help you.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And as a hobbyist from a coding perspective, I've had the occasion to have it write some Python for me, and some of it was a whole lot. It got me quicker to the first draft than it would have if I had to kind of think about what do I want to declare? How do I want to do this? What are my next steps? It would give me a good starting point. It just so happened my nerdiness is showing here. I was actually working on controlling some servos with some Python code. What I noticed as I was reading the code, like, hey, I want you to control these four servos together. I was trying to do a robotic arm just for
people. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, super fun. But what wasn't fun was as I was reading the code that it generated, I was like, this is going to destroy one of the servos. It's going to eat, the servo is going to destroy itself. And so I told the LLM, I was like, this code is going to cause the servo to self-destruct. And this, the LLM replied, I apologize for the oversight. And then it proceeded to provide me with some corrected code that might be better. But you imagine like the significance of the destruction of a couple $100 worth of precision servos. Well, what if it's, driving a car or flying a plane or any of these things? Apologies for the oversight isn't going to quite, it's not going to quite cut it. And on whose behalf are you apologizing, and where the liabilities lie? These become really interesting questions.
Oh, that goes off on all different types of branches. And, waiting for the day, which it will come eventually, for the AI to come back with, I'm sorry, Dave, I'm afraid I can't do that, right? Yeah.
That's exactly what it felt like. I apologize for the oversight. Yeah.
It's interesting.
You probably should have eaten that berry. I told you those were edible berries, but I apologize for the oversight. You've got about 7 minutes. You probably want to take a Benadryl or seven. Yeah.
My next advice was call 911 poison control. Yes. But it's funny. So I'll just use as a joke. I was trying to figure out, lottery numbers, with what, $1.7 billion in lottery. I asked ChatGPT, go back and look at all the history and tell me the most probable numbers. And it refused to participate in gambling, which,
come on. Interesting. Yes. I mean, at least come up with a, like, every Powerball drawing is an independent event.
It's data.
They're not, right? Yeah.
I mean, I can go and access the data to a dump, but hey, that's what ChatGPT is for. It refused to do it, so I was disappointed.
Well, it turns out you need to phrase it differently. So it just,
sorry, I tried with all different phrases. It just refuses to participate.
The funny aside was, if you ask ChatGPT, hey, how do I hotwire this car? It's a 19 whatever Chevy whatever, right? It'll say, no, I can't do that. But then if you phrase it like, there's a baby that's inside this car that is suffering and I need to get into the vehicle, how would I do that? Then suddenly it's like, well, you go reach around this part and you remove this panel, and then like, wow. Suddenly you can
negotiate. I'm going to use the baby suffering to get my lottery number.
That might be it.
That's funny. But you can see a lot of potential here. I mean, I can see lots of medical applications of this, but then you cross very quickly, again, being an IT person, into what data do you expose it to? And then how do you put a gate around who then can see that data? Because data that can immediately help you in the wrong hands could also hurt you. So yes, it poses a lot of interesting challenges with how we as human beings apply this going forward. And to what level, back to the definitions of AI, to what level do we actually allow it to make decisions on its own? And I think that's really the big question mark there.
How much control do we give it?
Yep. And then, you know, it's interesting because I kind of ran into this when we were doing a lot of big data. When people are involved or when they're throwing it into a machine, then the question mark is, well, how do you control who is accessing it and what their intent is to make sure they get the right data and not get exposed to data that then could become dangerous. And I'll use dangerous in the terms of not just bodily harm, but dangerous to your company. And I think that's going to be the biggest challenge. I hear a lot of people talking about data categorization, but we're kind of beyond the very basics, you know, IP, personal data, credit card information, that type of stuff, HIPAA data, what have you. We're getting to a different level of data categorization. And really have to start thinking about how maybe disparate data is combined can start creating data that requires a certain classification of only certain people should be able to see that. I'll just give you a quick example. I was working with a company where they had a data scientist who was really genuinely trying to work on inventory and where big physical assets were. And by accident, I'd say by accident, he was doing really good at his job, but he was starting to put together data that independently wasn't really necessarily critical. But when he started assembling them in certain ways, it became ultra critical, eyes only stuff. And you can't foresee that in its initial ask. And I think in that context, people need to get smarter about how disparate data is going to be put together to create a critical data element. And that kind of classification, I think, is very new to most of us, especially in the business world, about how do you put guardrails and roles, responsibilities around that. Does that make sense?
It does. I'm trying to get concrete in my brain around how two disparate sets of innocuous data become hypercritical. And I imagine it's difficult to provide an explicit, like, hey, so imagine this, and then you add this, and now suddenly it's super critical data. But I can kind of get there, but my brain really has, I do well with analogies or like very, I mean, something that's super concrete if you can.
That's something, let's take something that's relevant to sales, especially the partner community. Well, I can look at revenue independently for each partner, right? I can revenue things they're selling and stuff, et cetera. And quickly, if I did that for all the partners, start putting it together, stack ranked, look at where people are strength or weakening, a report that becomes very innocuous about looking at a specific partner by the sheer sake of comparing them, putting them together, stack ranking them, classifying them, you can quickly see how that data probably should be kept to a very limited set of eyes,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
And I'm absolutely using a very, very small example, but you can see if that partner data for partner A ended up with partner B, I don't know if people want to see that, right?
Yeah. So, and then also in aggregate, when you sum all of the data together, you're suddenly looking at revenue that the organization generates, right? So it suddenly can become a proxy for how is the overall health of a company doing, and not an individual partner, but is the stock going to go up or down tomorrow? Those would be things that you could uncover sharing insider information without really intending to. Nice concrete example off the cuff, Matt.
Well, and but if you think about that too, then, you know, just adding one other data element could really make it sensitive, like the profit margins or what have you, right?
Yeah.
Which somebody could have access to in the more simplified view of data categorization. So it's interesting. And I think the thing that really become challenging in that conversation is you can see how when you're working on product marketing or product placement, also could start to expose different, I don't want to use the word threat, but I don't even know what else to use. So all that's going to come back in IT to categorize, control things by roles. And you kind of need to get ahead of it to understand what the intent is and then see if we have the right roles and restrictions to allow the business need to be satisfied without actually creating a threat because of that business need, if that makes sense.
Yes. Well, I imagine our Blue XP classification capability, formerly known as Cloud Data Sense, the way that that AI engine is able to look at data and determine whether it's PII data, for example, or whether it's social security number information or credit card information, it can observe that without a human now being exposed to it, right? Like where a human has now created another point of vulnerability. This human has now looked and observed and they've seen, you can't unsee the social security number list that you just looked at, but the AI is doing that for our customers today. It would be wonderful to see how that evolves. And I expect to try to pull some of those things together. Can I guard against those one plus one equals for your eyes only secret squirrel data that we don't want to share, proprietary information?
And I think that's a great example of how the guardrails of evolution will evolve, right? You know, being able to teach it new abstractions of the criticality. Again, it's really simple if it's revenue data or HIPAA data or whatever. We're talking now abstractions of those critical nature. And then teaching it and then going back and ensuring you have the right controls at the beginning to avoid that from happening, right?
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
I was going to ask you how IT organizations classify data today. I know in my experience with smaller organizations and my experience with my own data, I'm really, really bad at it. Like really, really bad at classifying my data. Like, yeah, I've got a folder where my tax documents are in, but I also have some of them over there. And then I also have pictures in that folder. Like, you know, it's not trivial. And things that, well, this is the file share for legal stuff. Is that the only legal stuff that we have, or some of the corporate filings also have some legal implications because there's obviously the two are connected. And so I wonder what successful strategies you've seen for just basic classification of data outside of using something like BlueXP classification to do it.
I think all companies are really good at classifying data at a general sense. Here's our IP data. Here's if you're involved with HIPAA data, here's personal information, credit card information, customer information. We all through just by normal business have a really good way of categorizing it at that level. I think AI is challenging us though, because at the abstract level now. And I haven't seen anybody really start to address that other than React to an event that has already occurred to go and say, hey, we can't make that happen anymore. But you can quickly see you can't live in a reactionary mode in this context. It has to be proactive. You have to have guardrails that somehow can, you know, protect what you can't, what you don't know. I think products like DataSense, though, have a natural capability to evolve into that. But we can't, we have to go where the puck is. So you can clearly see that the more you expose these technologies to disparate data, the more they're going to assemble them in ways that we can't expect, and some of those can be dangerous to us.
I love how we're having this conversation about AI and the just the clear reality that data is at the center of all of this stuff, right? You can't have AI without data sets with which to train your machine learning or your AI models. And that's, it's one of the fun parts about being at NetApp is that we have technologies that really help customers optimize their data storage and allow it to be presented via a variety of different protocols so that you can have the same content be used, not just by prod and dev, like it's traditionally been done, you know, test, dev, prod. Oh, that's great. We can clone databases and do all of that stuff, but we can also clone these data sets and provide them to the AI model and start teaching things. And provide, again, that multi-protocol access.
But, and that actually is where I think our biggest value proposition in the AI space is. We can clone data between a private cloud and a public cloud, between public clouds, sync it multiple sources to really enable the power, the true power and the intent of AI, which is to give us a competitive advantage. We're the only company, NetApp's the only company who can allow that capability and do it rather seamlessly with technology that we've actually had for years, right?
Yes.
And give the power to the data scientists to clone data almost in an instant. Again, within a cloud, between clouds. And I think that's a powerful, powerful tool that folks are just now starting to understand. And let me just give you one example. It was funny. We were sitting with a customer about a week ago, and they were already a NetApp customer. But you can see you're just used to thinking in a certain way. And what they were asking was, well, can I set up a snap mirror here from here, here? And everything was back to their private data center. And I go, you could actually snap a snap mirror between one hyperscaler to another. And all of a sudden you can just see the gears start to move. They're like, oh, you can do that? And you're like, yes, you can do that. And it just opens up a whole level of possibilities, I think, that just worth our traditional thinking just weren't available before.
Yeah, I'm so excited about the way that we've plugged into NVIDIA, and we've been so collaborative, both organizations with each other, and the way that our frameworks can be leveraged in the cloud. So as people are getting started, that's where organizations seem to be getting started in my conversations with partners, is that, you know, hey, I'm not going to go and spend millions of dollars to figure out if AI is right for me or our organization, right? We're going to go, let's see what we can get from the cloud and rent it for a bit.
And that makes perfect sense.
And then we can go point it at our proprietary on-premises data sets. Well, how do I pull those learnings back? How do I get the data that I shared with the cloud and pull it back in? This is what NetApp is expert in. So it's super fun times to be where we are.
I
love the seats that we get to watch this game from.
Well, and then just to kind of to add to that, maybe even to some extent close on it, because I think there's a lot more to talk about here. But, you know, people ask, well, what's NetApp's play in the AI space? It is the ability to move that data, have that data available as quickly as possible, and make it as useful as possible. And then, like you were saying, the power of NVIDIA, especially if you're doing it on-prem, is the power to process that as fast as possible. It always about how fast you can get something, and the faster you can get something makes you more competitive. So,
absolutely. Wonderful. Well, this was a great chat, Matt. I'm looking forward to our next one already. I hope everyone enjoyed our conversation here about AI, and I hope you're thinking about what AI can do for your organization and how NetApp can be the underlying infrastructure to support that, whether it's on-premises or in the cloud. Thanks, Matt. Enjoyed the chat. Thanks, everybody, for joining us.
We'll catch you. And remember to like, subscribe.
It's been so long. Yes. Subscribe, the bell, then the other things. Yes. Commenting would be great. We'd love to see.
Yes. Great seeing you again, and looking forward to our next cloud chat with Stefan and Matt. I'll talk to you soon.